Good morning and welcome to Getting Down to Brass Tacks. And today's date is the 28th day of the first month of 2021. We're almost at the end of the first month of the new 2021, the year which we hoped would be better than 2020. And so far, things have not been going that well, but it's good that we are here. And I'm also really happy to be with you today. As always, the program runs from now until 2 p.m. And as always, you can call us on 434-1790, or you can also email me at peter.w.wickham@gmail.com. The chat, 266-IVOB, the team, Mr. Dennis Johnson, myself, Peter Wickham. And as I said, we're here with you to listen and to respond as needs be. The subject at hand, of course, for everyone, we are concerned about COVID. We're concerned about the lockdown situation taking place in Barbados. We're concerned about how people will manage in light of the lockdown situation in Barbados. And I plan to give full ventilation to all of those issues. And I do hope that you will call and chat about those and other things that may be on your mind. We've had the benefit of views being expressed by the other colleagues who have done the programs this week. And then, of course, you get to hear my take on issues, which is usually a little different, but perhaps in this situation, not so very different. I want to start the day, however, looking at a slightly different issue. And this is one of road safety, not one of road safety in the way that you would normally think of it, but road safety in a slightly different way. There are many people in Barbados who use roads or who use the byways and not necessarily the highways, because some of us use off-road facilities to cycle. Some of us cycle for fun, some of us cycle for transportation. I live in a city where cycling is perhaps more popular as a mode of transportation than driving. In Barbados, however, we have not yet gotten to that stage, and we hope that at some point in time that we do. We've been having some problems, however, problems regarding the extent to which those of us who drive are not sensitive to those of us who cycle. And we've been having some challenges and some problems therewith. And as a result, I thought it appropriate to start this week's program off with a conversation with a lady called Francine Amon. And Francine is a cycling enthusiast par excellence. She does quite a bit of work in organizing a monthly bash, which is like heaven for people who like to cycle. But she's not here to talk about that. She's here to talk about the general issue of road safety and to give us some ideas about the things that we can and should do as we move towards making Barbados more cyclist friendly. Francine, good morning and welcome to Brass Tacks. Are you there?
Hi, morning, Peter. It's Francie,
though. No, Francine, it's Francie. Francie, my apologies. Yeah, that's a, I guess that's a Trini take on Francine, so Francie. Yeah, so Francie, what has been happening? What has been happening recently that we need to know about in terms of cycling? Because I know we had a problem just over a week ago. Someone was injured pretty badly. And I asked you if, based on that, you could take the opportunity to just make us more aware about what the situation is like.
Yeah, we've been having on and off. A few of our cyclists have been hit in just strange, just cycling to and from work or just cycling for fun. As you mentioned, people are cycling out there for fun. We're probably going out one or two people at a time during this time. But for instance, I am cycling to and from work maybe 3 or 4 days a week. And what I'm finding is people are passing too close. Also, people are blowing their horn, which can startle some of the cyclists riding. There's a kind of a different take on that. Some people want people to blow their horns. Other people don't. But we had a young guy, about 17 years old. He was hit while riding outside of his neighborhood, just riding for fun. He was a few feet from his home and he was hit. He's in the hospital now and hopefully he'll make a recovery, but we're hearing too many stories like this.
Yeah. But Francie, the basic challenge is that there are many people who drive, and you and I are similar in that we drive but we also ride. And as drivers, a lot of us seem to see cyclists as nuisances. And I think it's important that we answer the question in terms of the road, and roads are narrow at best. Who has a right of way on a road when you're looking at a situation between a person who is driving and a person who is cycling?
I think both people, you know, motorcyclists included, everybody who drives on the road has to share the road. We all have to follow the rules, but people have to be cognizant of that everybody, I mean, even pedestrians, that there are people on the road and we have to share the road and follow the rules. What we're finding with all the incidents that we're seeing is that particularly the motor cars on the road, you know, vans, ZR vans, those buses, they feel like they own the road. And they're not giving the proper leeway to pedestrians, cyclists, motorcyclists. It's just a matter of getting to a point where everybody can share the road fairly.
Yeah. Is there anything that we can do as drivers to make the situation better? Or is there anything that we can do as cyclists to make the situation better? There are conventions that as cyclists we are supposed to adopt regarding, you know, the ways and means we can make the situation better. We don't have bike lanes in Barbados. Hopefully we'll get to that stage eventually. But for the time being, we're looking at a situation of sharing. So is there anything that you can say first to the drivers and then secondly to the cyclists?
Well, to the drivers, there's a rule of thumb worldwide that 3 feet is really the distance you need to pass a pedestrian or a cyclist. Because our roads are very narrow, sometimes that does not happen. In this case, slow down, wait until the other car passes, and then proceed around the cyclist or the pedestrian. In my case as a cyclist, I try to use the minor roads or off-road as best I can. But in many cases, you have to use the main road and you're running into those issues.
Yeah. And what about cyclists? Are there any messages we can follow? I'm somewhat like you in that when I do cycle, I prefer to go off-road, as you know. I find it's safer. Honestly, the competition for space on the public highways, I find, is a bit much sometimes. But if we do have to use those highways, perhaps what are some of the things that we should, as cyclists, follow?
Well, in particular, I always recommend you wear bright safety kind of clothing, safety orange, safety yellow, where, you know, people can see you. You know, if you're riding at night, obviously you need a light, a backlight, front light, you know, always wear helmet, indicate whenever you're turning left or right or making any changes, the usual cycling things that you do.
Yeah, okay. And finally, Francie, can you just give me some, in terms of taking this opportunity to speak to those of you who, those among us who don't cycle, like Dennis, for example, who could probably do with a bit of exercise. What are some of the benefits of cycling? I mean, we have one person, Andrew Pilgrim, who is a well-known lawyer, QC, and he cycles everywhere. He's one of the few Barbadians that actually has a stated policy: I do not have a car, so I cycle. What are some of the benefits of that approach to life? You say that you cycle some days a week, as opposed to the approach that Dennis would normally take, where he drives everywhere.
Okay, well, firstly, and you know, normally you're reducing your footprint by cycling or walking, because then we don't have as many cars on the road and all of the fumes and gasoline, use of gasoline, etc. Then the normal thing of being able to be fitter. What I found with cycling, I started cycling later in life, and it was because I was having trouble with my knees and running, because I'm a runner also. It's just general exercise. Get out fresh air. You know, instead of getting into the gym, just get out there and ride. Even if you do a few K every day, you feel better. You know, your whole mental health is better. For me, that's how it is.
Okay. All right. And Francie, I want to thank you again for taking some time. I hope that you've raised some awareness. Dennis assures me that he does cycle. He has a mountain bike, and it's one of the few things that he's done from the time he was a youth. He says that he grew up cycling in Grenada, where the hills were challenging compared to Barbados. So when we have the next bash, Francie, we need to invite Dennis to join us. We don't have a Grenada Hills, so he should find it fairly easy going. But sure. Francie, thanks again for joining us, and I appreciate the work that you do in helping to bring awareness to this alternative means of transportation and certainly alternative means of fitness and fun. Thanks again.
Yes, and hopefully everybody can join the bash when we get back started again. You know, in the meantime, everybody stay safe and look us up on Facebook. We are Barbados Bike.
Okay. Thanks again, Francie. And so certainly if anybody out there is interested in getting involved, the bash is normally the end of, I think it's the last Sunday in every month or the first Sunday in every month. I forget. I don't know, one of the two. But anyhow, if you need to find us, you can. Of course, it's suspended for the time being for obvious reasons. And we do hope that we can get back to normal life fairly soon. So, Francie, thanks again. And as we begin the regular programming on Brass Stacks, I imagine that we have quite a few calls that are lining up to go on. I give you the benefit of my views on these situations as the program progresses. So let's start and take the first call and say good morning and welcome to Down to Brass Stacks.
Good morning, Peter.
Hi, morning. This is Glenn.
Hi, this is Glenn Murray. How are you, sir?
How are you going? Good, good. You were calling to get involved in the cycling too?
I'm not that much of a daredevil anymore.
Okay, fair enough. Okay. Welcome to the program.
I probably have to try a tricycle if they still have those. I want to talk a bit about COVID. Let's start this way. On Tuesday, the Prime Minister announced in her presentation to the public that it was estimated it would cost Barbados between some $20 to $25 million to cover this period of lockdown that's coming up. $20 to $25 million for about a month, I think, is the time she said. That is a lot of money to spend on a month, and it made me realize that governments, like individuals, there are very few individuals I know who have endless money, and a very few, no government in the world I know has an endless supply of money. Even the mighty United States has to take choices, just like individuals in our life. So it seems to me that to spend $25 million on lockdown, and I prefer lockdown to pause, because if you're fighting a war, as it has been declared, you don't pause in a war. You hunker down. You go into your bunker, you get aggressive, and you're determined to fight the enemy, this time the invisible enemy that's called. So the languaging of it is, I think, a fight and a war and lockdown don't go together, and it creates the right frame of mind to achieve the hopeful objectives. But but that made me realize that, therefore, with this money, which would not have been planned for and budgeted for, that government will have to go back to the drawing board, the financial drawing board, I make some adjustments in their programming, how they were trying to allocate various portions to, say, education or to roads or whatever. And so therefore he said, you know something, it'd be interesting to find out what we have spent so far on COVID. Because if 25 for a month, or 2025 for a month, we might have spent a considerable amount. And he says that because it would then give me, I think, and other people an appreciation what it is costing Barbados to fight COVID. I know the financial is not over yet. We don't know what's happening this year, but I like an approximate idea as how much we must have expended in medicine or staff or et cetera. Because I think it will help people to understand that if you do foolishness, if you don't follow the protocols, you're not only you're endangering your life, now your friends, your family, you're also having to pauperize the society. Because if the society with a limited amount of funds has to keep expending money on COVID, to fight COVID, to preserve our lives, to preserve the society, it means we have less money to spend on enhancing the quality of our life on our national well-being. I think that would make a difference to my understanding of it and an appreciation of it, to know you can't. These things are not just happening out there. It has an impact, has an implication for the rest of the society. And that, I think that that would something that would help to create a better awareness as to what really is going on inside. This is not something abstract out there that government is doing. This is what we are doing, what is happening to us, what we are taking hard money to spend on because we have to. And therefore, it is our responsibility to make sure that we join in the fight. We do all the responsible things to make sure that, that this battle is winnable and that it's actually won. I don't know if you want to say it.
No, I don't disagree with you, Glenn. I think that that's the kind of information that the public is entitled to. And I, too, am curious to know what this is costing. My assumption is that at the end of it all, we'll hear a price tag being given. But, you know, the question as to whether we ought to hear that information sooner rather than later, I don't think it's unreasonable. This has been going on for a year.
Right.
And normally, we would have a budgetary process in which there would be an accounting, financial accounts that would become available that we would be able to know things like this fairly soon. So, I'm with you on that. When I listened to you, Doug Lane, you know, it struck in my mind that I am really struggling to understand what it is that we are doing so badly in Barbados or so wrong. Because,
how do you connect that with me talking?
It's a different direction. I just said that as I'm listening to you, I'm just thinking aloud.
Okay.
I'm not suggesting that you are going down that road. It's a different road. But I'm just saying that we also need to, in terms of looking at the cost, we also need to look at, you know, what are some of the best practice and worst practice scenarios that we have globally. The Swedish, they had a program where they did not deal with lockdowns at all. And the repercussions have been disastrous there from what I am understanding. They have not done any better or any worse than anywhere else as far as health is concerned. Economically, they've done a little better. But as far as the health situation is concerned, you know, they have been under the same pressure. So in addition to knowing what this thing is costing, I feel that we also need to do a little bit of a reflection on what exactly did we do wrong. I mean, I'm hearing now that Antigua is going into lockdown. St. Vincent seems to be heading in that direction. St. Lucia as well. It's been challenging. It really is.
It is giving you. It's really creating a sense of uncertainty about the future that I never felt before in Barbados, and it's really disconcerting. Yeah. It thrown me off my stride in terms of my mood and my feelings for the country, you know, development and looking down the road, etc. And I think that has also made me reflect on the fact that I know governments have a national priority. One of the things on this calendar for this year has been the fact that we were supposed to become a republic by the time we celebrate our 55th anniversary in November. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering now if it's in this climate, both financially and psychologically and all the other aspects of national life, rather, this is something that we would also have to reconsider.
Let's reconsider it. Let's reconsider it in the other direction, because it's something that we can do easily. So in a situation like that, where we can create a feel good in the same way that we did for Nelson, I would say, let's go ahead and do it, because it's not difficult. It's interesting that you say that, because look at Scotland, for example, and Scotland is moving ahead with their plans for independence referendum number two, and the public opinion is fully supportive of it, even as they are dealing with the fallout from COVID, because their feeling is that there are other issues, you know, of great importance.
I'm not challenging the idea of going of a republic, because to me, in my personal life, I've not felt less of a Barbadian by being a Barbadian than Marky. Even so, when I was a citizen as a colony, it has not meant anything. I always felt good about Barbados and good about myself. So this is something that I will take in my stride. It has never been a priority. I've been in positions where I've had to represent Barbados here and abroad. And not being a republic has not in any way inhibited Barbados' performance or how we were treated or regarded. So it's something that we will evolve into. Like, we evolve into cabinet government, and then we went into full internal self-government. So I think it's something that we will take in our stride.
I got you, Glenn. You just don't know if it's a priority, no. And,
right now,
I feel it's even more of a priority, no.
This is a no turning back kind of change. It's going to be a It's going to be fundamental. It's going to change Barbados fundamentally forever. I feel, therefore, the country should be involved, should be part of it, should be. It cannot
Maho.
Right, you know, I don't know how much of a call. I don't know exactly what is involved. I don't know what planning has gone in. I'm just saying that we probably need to give that a fresh look in the light of what is all that is happening now. And we don't know how long this COVID is going to go on for.
Well, my feeling is let's give it a fresh look. And my fresh look is to say let's do it and let's try and do it sooner than we had planned. That and 11 plus. Those are two things that I think we need to take a fresh, urgent look at in light of what's going on with COVID. So I'm agreeing with the idea of a fresh look, but I am disagreeing with the speed that you're proposing. Nonetheless, I respect your view.
All I'm asking is a review, a rethink, a reset, if necessary.
All right. Thanks a lot, Glenn. Good chatting with you. Rosemary Arlene, who is well known to most of you, is telling me that she cannot ride a bicycle. Some time ago, I did a brief survey on this program. Some of the names that came up who couldn't ride bicycles were Rosemary Arlene, Carol Roberts, Peter Arlene, I believe, doesn't know to ride a bicycle either. Happy that Dennis is not in that group. I was fascinated when people don't know how to ride a bicycle as adults, which is ironic because I can't swim. And one would argue that that's something that adults should also be able to do, should know how to swim. And all these people I mentioned can swim. So, interested. Dr. Brastacks, good morning.
Good morning, Peter. How are you doing?
Morning, sir. How's it going? This is Mr. P.
Good. I think it'd be for most man, though.
I ain't about that. Carry on, sir. Carry on.
I'll be standing there like, I can't ask some support to you. I have said that people who broke the protocols should be jailed. Now, I had heard Dennis Johnson talking to a caller some time ago, and he said that, Dennis Johnson said that it makes no sense in jailing the persons is going to put added expense on the taxpayers. Now, I want to tell you about what I said about jailing them. I agree with Mr. Johnson's approach. Get some money out of them. It makes good sense. Rather than spending $25 on them, and then spend $100 on them. Good sense. I am done. Mm-hmm. Now, although I can appreciate what the government is doing now, I think that should have been done in the first instance. And I even think it should be more than 2 weeks. To achieve goals, sacrifices always have to be made. Nothing comes easy for the small man. But it's not even for the rich. Right? But at the end of the day, when you look back, you would have seen where the sacrifices were made. It's just like rural construction. It comes with great inconvenience. Nobody don't like being inconvenienced, the dust and all of that. But then you look back and you see the finished product, and instead of driving by rough terrain, you're now driving on a smooth surface. It's worth it. So I think that the shutdown should be at least a 3 weeks, and I would like them to relook the issue of the village shop. Because a man may want 2 packs of biscuits. He lives in the area of a shop. I don't think it's fair that he should go all down for you in time just to get 2 packs. I use it as an example. Me, I would do it for 2 packs of biscuits. But everybody don't have the same mindset as you or I or Dennis. Right? So I think that need to be relaxed. And if there should be stipulations with the relaxation of it, and if you are caught breaking the stipulations, then you should be dealt with in the most severe way. That need to be left. The case of pensions. Yeah, first callers come to this pensioners call this calling program on many occasions that people come and change the pension checks and take the money and all that kind of thing. Because every pensioner that is going, every person is going to be out there because they don't have anything else to do. Yes, there's some who does it, but there's some who have a basic reason for being on the road. And I don't know how they're going to how they can deal with that, but you need to have dialogue with people. And I will close there.
Okay, thank you for calling, Mr. P. I want to associate myself, Mr. P, with those comments you made regarding the village shops. I have to admit that while I support the initiatives that are being taken to deal with COVID, and I continue to be fully supportive of whatever government is doing, I'm struggling with the village shops initiative because I do understand how people are dealing with it. I read an excellent contribution from Eric Lewis this morning on Facebook, and I shared it as well. And in that, Eric Lewis was making a point about the number of people in Barbados who operate in a particular way. And he talked about the lady who may braid hair for a living. She may plait ahead and get $60. And she takes that $60 and she heads out to the village shop to buy two, three things that she needs. And she sets aside $20 or $30 for that. And then she sets aside $20 or $30 for something else. Later in the week, she may get some work cleaning in somebody's house. And she deals with the money that she gets from that. I've been making that point with respect to many people in Barbados who live on that basis, who are not salaried, who do not have the luxury of going to a supermarket and buying the groceries for whole week, who essentially operate on the basis of what they get paid when the week comes. Unless we are in a position to provide for that person, to ensure that that person can go and shop in a supermarket, essentially the village shops become necessary. Now, I understand the challenge with the village shops, because during the last lockdown, the village shops became a venue for linemen, loitering, associating. A lot of the village shops sold rum through the back door, and people would tell you about a shop you could go by and you got a back entrance and you can get your rum. Of course, you pay a little bit more money, and of course, you're not going to stand up and drink by yourself. So that is essentially a contravention of the rules and regulations. I understand that challenge, and I also understand that village shops are in many ways more expensive on the householder in the long run because they charge a premium as opposed to what you would pay if you go to a supermarket and you buy a large number of items or you go to one of these wholesale shopping places. But at the same time, for a person who is operating on a job-to-job, money-to-money, day-to-day kind of basis, it's difficult to suggest to that person that they should change their pattern and move to a week-long basis. We need to take some kind of action that would allow these people to survive. Either the village shops have to remain open and allow people to go in and do their purchasing without the expectation that they can stay and lime and have a drink. Or alternatively, as a society and as a government, we have to be able to provide some funds for these people to be able to make their kind of purchases on a week-to-week basis. And I suspect that the latter is not going to be an option. So that's my take on it. And certainly, I would support what is being said in that regard, Mr. P. I just saw some very disturbing news online. Apparently, veteran Calypsonian singer Sandra, who is Sandra Devine's Millington, has died. She seemed to have passed away last night. She was a two-time Calypso monarch. Singer Sandra was known for Voices from the Ghetto and Nobody Wins a War. Singer Sandra was also known for Dying with Her Dignity. Apparently, she's been in the ICU after undergoing surgery. And she was there in 2015. And she seems now to have passed. I want to pay tribute to this queen of Calypso. She was a giant. She's a giant in a class by herself. Because the songs that I talked about, Voices from the Ghetto and Die With My Dignity, those were some powerful, powerful songs. And I think that the Calypso world is so much worse off having lost Singer Sandra. Singer Sandra had hits, one could say, back in the day when Dennis was a little younger and had a full head of hair. She was one of these people who was able to live on the basis of those hits because anytime Singer Sandra came to perform any of those songs I mentioned, people would come out to hear her because that's ultimately what she was known for. And there are a few artists who can make a reputation, a living, a career on the basis of one or two major hits. So Singer Sandra has passed. I'm not seeing the age in the article. I'm sure that Dennis will be in a position to give that information at some point in time, but she is no longer with us. So rest in peace and rise in glory. dear Miss Devines.